Back on downtown. A little song that McCartney wrote about his dog.
Oh. It's not why I picked it.
No.
I like dogs. We were talking about dogs.
We were. That's why I that's right, added that bit of info.
I don't pay attention.
No. Eric Meehan is with us from Bangor Wine and Cheese Company with this week's message in the bottle. Greetings, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to go, woo! It's yes, all I live yes. for. I love that band.
And how long do you get, how often do you get to sing about suffragettes in a song?
That and Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wings is funny. Like, I'm of this like weird little like 5 year span where like we didn't listen to bands like that. Like the Beatles were legit, and the gritty rock bands of that era were legit because they were sort of informing the glam rock bands of them. But like that sort of progressive rock thing, like I didn't get that until I was about 30, and I was like, wow. Paul McCartney did other stuff. Of course he did. Yeah. And it was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. That's one of the great albums.
It is. And it's actually, I'm sure you've probably had a wiser guest on than me to talk about the creation of that album, but it was a nightmare, basically. Yeah, yeah. It was crazy.
They got kidnapped. They lost song lyrics and tapes.
I mean, just the conditions. The studio was like, you know, it was like a dirt floor, a sand floor. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Let's go to Nigeria for the new album, love. What do you think? Let's do it there. Idea. That sounds great.
And the bandmates must have been like, okay.
Well, they lost. Two guys quit.
That's right. That's right.
rather than go to Nigeria and record that. I'm out, Paul. Sorry.
And you got to like have bought like I believe how could you not believe in Paul McCartney? But you're like, no, I'm out. I got some session work down the street.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway, I picked that. So I was, every week now I'm sending, you know, Rich some ideas. I try to come up with like songs that kind of relate to what we're talking about. And today, amongst other things, we've got several topics from South America to talk about. Flying Winemakers was one of them. So I was looking up all this great stuff. I found this one techno song about flying spaghetti monster that I really almost insisted upon, but I was
very excited for that for a moment.
Anyway, look, if you're curious, look up Flying Spaghetti Monster by Dr. P. It's inexplicable, but fabulous. It just made my morning in one of those ways. And of course, speaking of Paul McCartney, you had, you know, flying from the Beatles, from Yellow Submarine stuff, but we went with that. It was cool. All right. So we kind of ran out of time about Argentina last week, and we're going to talk about Uruguay and sort of do a South America recap. And then next week, I'll do my, since it's, you know, November kind of fell a little bit differently this year than last year. Next week, will be the Thanksgiving pairing. Talk about, you know, wines for the holidays, sort of thing.
And I'll be out next Tuesday.
Oh.
I have parent-teacher conferences at school. Bruce will be here. So you may
he
need
doesn't
to bring,
like wine very much.
Right, so you may need to bring
a couple
more wine.
Extra bottles. Very good.
I'm just saying.
Well warned. Thank you. Hey, I appreciate
you
that. That would fill me with trepidation if I walked in and just saw him and be like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Fantastic. So, we'll talk about a little bit about the Argentine grapes, about Uruguay, but flying winemakers. We sort of started to talk about the Argentine wine scene becoming more relevant and more current. And so what's this concept of a flying winemaker? And it was, funny enough, brought into stark contrast today because I was tasting wines from the Deutsch family selections, which includes several wines by Michel Roland, who is arguably the most famous flying winemaker in the world. The flying winemaker concept is essentially that a lot of very wealthy people who bought estates and didn't know quite what to do with them and or estates, bless you, with breaking the fourth wall, that, you know, they lost a particularly important winemaker and they didn't quite know where to go. And they brought in, essentially it's a consultant. And I hate that. Anybody who's seen like Office Space, that's how I feel about consultants too. It's just one of those terms that just kind of makes my skin crawl. However, of course there's, expert advisors, perhaps we'll call them, that do, travel throughout the world and essentially consult on wines. And why is this increasingly possible? Well, not only because of flying, right, and the increased ease of international travel, more or less, but also now, you know, with the ability to simply send someone into the field and take samples of the soil or samples of the grapes and the Brix, right, which is the ratio of sugars to waters and things, yeah. And then you can just send these things, and these people can look at their email and say, okay, this looks good, or you should, harvest a day sooner than you thought. Why is this relevant? And who is Michel Roland? Well, Michel Roland is the man behind the wine Clos de los Siete. Clos de los Siete is one of the world's most famous wines. It is a fantastic Bordeaux-style wine. Clos, meaning the French term for like a walled-in vineyard. And Siete, obviously seven in the Spanish language. Seven Bordelais families went in on this property, and they said to Michel Roland, will you go and do this? Michel Roland, this is crazy. I mean, this gives you an example of how busy these guys can get, guys and girls, I should say, men and women. Michel Roland consults for over 100 wineries in 13 different countries.
Wow.
I mean, imagine having to consult in times past, even within your own country, say France. I mean, so Michel Roland is from Pomerol, right? Pomerol is a sub-region of Bordeaux. And even to consult within the rest of Bordeaux, traveling by car takes you a while, much less if somebody hired you to go to Burgundy, which is in France, but nowhere near Bordeaux, across several mountain ranges across the Massif Central. You're talking, you know, quite a while, or, you know, maybe with the advent of the TGV, right, the high-speed trains, that's, you know, aided people there. But, you know, you need this international travel, and not only international travel, but again, this ease of the internet enable this. And so that's why you've got a guy who can consult at 100 plus wineries. And I mean, that just blows my mind. Like, every time I think, like, I'm too busy for this, I try to think about these people who are just like, I don't think they sleep. There's no chance. But anyway, and Clos de los Siete, by the way, will be on our shelves starting Friday again, because it finally came in the new vintage, which is why we were visited by the guy today. I want to talk about some of the other grapes of Argentina, and the one we're drinking right now, which is Torontes. Torontes is arguably Argentina's most identifiable white varietal. The one we're drinking right now is called Torontes de Mercado, and basically market. It's a liter bottle. Torontes is a very fresh, vibrant wine. It's got a lot of, you know, beautiful citrusy aromatics, typically dry. I've had some with just a touch of weight. I've had one that was oaked, but very rarely do you see that. It's mainly done in stainless steel or cement, and just designed to give you a lot of sort of really wonderful perfumey qualities. It is a cross of Criolla Chica, which also is the Pais grape, and we talked about Argentine Pais, the red grape, being partly Torontes. Torontes is itself partly Pais, and partly, and mostly, especially when you smell it, the grape Muscat d'Alexandria. No, Muscat d'Alexandria, or Moscato d'Alexandria, or whatever you want to call it, is considered to be the oldest known varietal in the world in terms of sort of going straight back. It was generally considered to be distributed around the greater Mediterranean area by the Phoenicians. And for those who don't know who the Phoenicians were, not a lot of people really do. It's sort of one of history's great mysteries, and National Geographic did a great series on them a couple of years back at this point, trying to sort of trace their genetic lineage. But they were tremendous traders, T-R-A-D-E-R, traders. they just, you know, they went everywhere and spread this particular varietal, which, and you can understand, like, a really light citrusy white in the Mediterranean I mean, you know, it sells itself, right? Like, hey, I brought some grapes. Oh, really cool. They make a really nice wine that's like light and fresh and delicious. Okay, all right. I will buy some, you know, and it just went everywhere. and so, yeah, so this is Tarantis, right? And I did an interesting sort of experiment several years ago because I found this to be sort of this wonderful aromatic grape. I aged it. And it didn't age great because it lacks a little bit of the acidity that you would want to see in a white that would, you know, age well, like a Riesling, yeah, high acidity. But it took on some very, very interesting aromatic tones. So it's kind of a fun little varietal that you should definitely check out. Mm. Speaking of white grapes in Argentina, and I do know I don't have a ton of time, Argentina certainly is growing some excellent Chardonnays, even some interesting Sauvignon Blancs, Viognes, Semillon. People are really playing around. And again, remember, this is all very high altitude planting, including Tarantes is from north of Mendoza, actually just south of Bolivia, at altitudes of 7,600 feet. And it is, it's a plain called the Salta Plain, which is dominated by the city of Salta. But it's extraordinarily cold, extraordinary desert-like conditions, dry, no phylloxera, no mildews or anything like that. So it's all very organic, dry farm stuff, and it's all turning out very, very well. Of course, we talked about Malbec last week, the star of Argentina. That is what the Clos de los Siete is based on. It is a Malbec Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, and Syrah blend. But Malbec, obviously the star. Very, very different than the Malbec that came over from France. A little less chewy, a little bit more round and voluptuous in most incarnations. We talked about País, right, which is the mission grape, different in Chile than in Argentina. Bonarda is not the same as you find in Italy. It is thought to be related to the Douce Noir from Savoie, and it makes some interesting kind of funky, usually blended wines. And you see Cabs, and you see Syrahs, and you see some other interesting stuff. I did want to talk about Uruguay slightly as well. It is South America's fourth largest producer after Brazil, but remember that Brazil keeps most of its stuff in country, and most of it isn't really great. A lot of sort of sparkling, semi-frizzy, fun wine, but nothing real serious. So Uruguay, smaller country, fourth largest producer, but much more serious, growing a lot of the grape Tannat, T-A-N-N-A-T, from the Basque region originally. Very chocolatey, wonderful stuff. We're not seeing a lot of it in Maine. In fact, my favorite producer has now basically been dropped because I guess they didn't sell a lot and they don't make a lot. But if you see some, do check it out. I'm running out of time, so I want to remind people of a couple of different things. First of all, this Thursday is our monthly tasting. We have really awesome wines from Devonish. We picked them out today. Do not miss this tasting. Killer wines. Also, Frederickson Farms from Winterport with their Chèvres, cranberry orange, garlic and herb, and blueberry, and some other great stuff. And then we'll be having a wonderful tasting on the December 12th, which is natural wines from the Chartrand portfolio, most of the Loire and Southern French stuff. Don't miss that. And then on the 19th of December, we'll have a regular monthly tasting then. The last thing I wanted to note, real quick, is that it is 1 month since the tariffs went into effect. They're not going away, I'm sorry. And you are going to start to see price increases, and you're going to start to hear about people who are kind of dealing with it on the other end. I'm real sorry, folks. And there's one easy way to deal with it, and that's the polls. But otherwise, my apologies, and continue to shop small retailers, and we'll do our best to make it all go away soon. Thanks.
Thank you, Eric Meehan.
Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Message in the Bottle, every Tuesday afternoon. By the way, I would appreciate if Eric Charles would maybe make me some mittens for the winter season.
Master knitter, Eric Charles. He's
good
busy. He's doing his own thing.
Good for
him.
He
doesn't take orders.
I don't suspect he
does. You don't do requests.
No.